Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, episode 194, Candace Patton, Open Up. We are Ladies with Gumption. We usually recap DCTV in a flash. I'm May, and I'm here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
You can find us on everywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and the like. You can reach us at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, where you can send us your lovely asks or your thoughts to our email at ladieswgumption@gmail.com. You can always tweet at us at DCTVGumption, where we usually live tweet shows, which we are not doing right now because the shows are not on. If you do want to hear us talk more about other things besides DCTV, we do have our Patreon, where you can go to patreon.com/DCTVGumption to listen to us chat about The Boys, HBO Max premium shows like Peacemaker, Doom Patrol. We've done Encanto, we've done The Batman, we've done Turning Red, we've done Bridgerton, we are going to do Harley Quinn Season 3, The Umbrella Academy Season 3, and perhaps Paper Girls as well. So we have a long lineup, and if you do want to hear us talk about anything that you're currently watching and think we would be interested in chatting about, you can also email us to our Gmail. We do not have any news this time around because we discussed it in our SDCC podcast earlier, which you can now listen to. So we will get on to talking about what happened on the Open Up podcast with Candace Patton that she did with Elliot Knight, in which she opened up about a lot of stuff that happened on The Flash and just her experience in Hollywood in general as a Black woman. And to take us away will be the lovely Jessica.
Yay! So, of course, this was a much highly anticipated premiere episode of Elliot Knight's Open Up podcast, where he interviews a lot of diverse talent within the industry and talk about, issues dealing with diversity, dealing with different things from different perspectives, being actors, being writers, behind the scenes, photography, camera people. You have Black actors, LGBT actors, or people in the industry. So there's a whole lot of different perspectives and a wide range of topics that they cover. And his first episode was with Candace Patton. And to kind of give you an overview of the episode, first you have like a Candace's introduction of how she identifies herself as a Black woman in the industry, as a person, things like that. And this interview was actually filmed or recorded during the hiatus between season 7 and season 8. So one interesting thing to note was that at one point during the podcast, Candace was saying, when she was talking about the transition between herself as Candace the person and Iris West the character, that they were in hiatus and going into season 8, which would probably be her last season. And of course, that was before we got the news that they were being renewed for what we now know is the final season 9. So I guess if you want to frame this discussion, was from Candace's mindset that season 8 will be the last season. And of course, this episode premiered in the first weekend of July. So that was right after season 8 finished. And so, you know, in her mind at that time, probably this is after the show had finished and this is when their podcast is going to debut. So that's kind of like the mindset you can go into thinking of Candace's mindset giving this interview. And so she and Elliot talked a lot about, her experiences on the Flash set as a person dealing with social media, with the protection or lack thereof from people behind the scenes. And Elliot also mentioned some of his experiences as well. And so it's a really, really interesting and in-depth podcast. And I know that, you know, as we go through some of these things, because I remember like during the Black Lives Matter summer where, and they mentioned this actually in the podcast as well, where you have like, you know, everybody, all of your white friends, like, oh my God, calling up all the Black people, like, they're okay. Promising to do better. And during that time we did, we, Ladies with Gumption, did an episode on allyship, and we kind of ranked the Arrowverse actors in terms of allies, and some of those
how young we were
rankings need to change.
Yes, so, before we knew. Before we knew. Everyone's getting an F.
Yes, we might touch on that as we go through it, but just to start out, kind of going throughout the conversation, the first thing that they kind of talk about is just the fact that Candace is doing this social media or this interview with Elliot because she doesn't really like to do interviews, she mentions. And kind of talking about Candace versus social media, she doesn't really feel comfortable giving much of herself away for public consumption. So that's why her Instagram is curated as it is and why she doesn't do a lot of personal interviews because, you know, she doesn't know those people. She doesn't know what their intentions are on asking her questions or inviting her over and getting her point of view. So I wanted to start there and what you guys think of that revelation of why she moves on social media the way she does or why we may not get as many interviews or candid opportunities to hear her speak that maybe we want to as fans.
I think that as fans, we have kind of already noticed this pattern, and I think that most of us have attributed it to the correct thing, like what she ended up saying. But it is sad to hear it from her. Like, I think it's the right thing for her to do for herself, but it's sad that she had to kind of put up this protective wall because of what she went through. And then also that she does not feel like she can trust people to have the best intentions for her, you know, because you have to have gone through things.
Do you think it's because she went through things? Because I feel like she's always, like, if you even go further down, like, she's never really, she doesn't put a lot of her family or anything, like a lot of her personal stuff. We know that she's never done that. So I don't know
that part is just like privacy and like whatever, but yes. I don't need to do that. I'm fine with that. I think some people just don't post about themselves all that much really. And that's cool. I certainly don't. So that's fine with me, but I'm talking about like having like doing interviews and like stuff like that where you can like open up or where you can talk about your perspective. Cause we're always like, what is Candace's perspective on this? Right? Like Candace has not spoken up about this. And she said like she hasn't had a platform before, right, where she feels like that person, like someone, the other person who might be listening or who might be like opening the door for her to speak is really going to have her back or protect her the way that Elliot might, on the other hand. So I thought that was interesting and also something that we've kind of surmised before. Like, Sheath Authority was supposed to be that platform, you know what I mean? But where did that go? That's and how much true. Did she really get to use it or to say anything on it? So I feel like it speaks to like maybe there have been attempts to make that happen, but they did not go anywhere until now.
That's a good point.
2020. Where do I but yeah.
Yeah. I think in terms of, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And like I said, you already suspected as much, but I feel like at least with regards to her Instagram, even though she's never really posted about her family per se, but I feel like a few years ago, she would have posted more of about work or like maybe an event she went to and there were some people versus later on where it's a lot of like selfies or her on her own and things like that. And I feel like that's because she couldn't really post anything on social media without people being up in her comments saying,
things like that.
And it's just got like, you don't want to have to deal with that. So you just post the safest thing you can post, which is yourself. And even then, people in the comments are being bitchy, racist, or whatever. So I totally get that. And I feel like it is really sad that, you know, I mean, as an actor in general, you have to, part of the job is doing interviews and being open to the media or having to promote certain things. But I feel like outside of that, you don't have to give yourself to people who, like, when you're not doing your job, you don't have to be on, you know? And I feel like she's really taken that lesson, especially with her experiences in the past and questions from people who have tried to frame certain things a certain way, even about her character and things like that. So she's kind of like, you know, backtracked a little bit and been like, no, I need to protect myself. And I totally get it because it's not like the fans we already know have been racist towards her in general, but some members of the media have also not been the greatest towards her, especially like in the very beginning, the first seasons of The Flash. So I feel like that's really affected her mentally, and it makes sense that she would just not want to give an interview to anybody willy-nilly.
I think that's a good point too, because especially if you go back to the beginning and the interviews, and it kind of goes into, you know, also behind the scenes where they talk a little bit later about how she wasn't getting protected or promoted in the same way as her counterparts, and people in the media were not doing their job in following what the story was for the show, but instead trying to ask Candace, what do you think about Snowberry? Like, who the fuck? Right. Why would you ask her that, you know?
Yeah. Or how do you feel about fans not liking you?
Yeah. Different things like that. So that's kind of what they were talking, she and Elliot were talking about, you know, is like the Hollywood package. Because I think she said that when she's talking about having like an identity crisis and separating herself as Candace from Iris, because as you know, a lot of fandom, they see you as your character and they don't really know how to separate the reality from the fictional character. And I think that goes into a lot of, you know, comments that she would get in terms of they didn't like something Iris did. And so that just meant that we need to be mad at Candace. And it's like, well, Candace didn't write the script. But also I think, from the podcast, from Candace's perspective and talking about how you have the character of Iris and how she, you know, lives, breathes, acts as a character, and then trying to put that on Candace as a person. Candace is a person, like a real human that has flaws, maybe has different, hobbies or likes or dislikes or aesthetics and how she wants to sell her hair, her nails, and then, you know, getting like the comment of, you know, showing her hiatus nails and someone telling her you're ungrateful for not for this job, and you know, if you don't want to be Iris, then why are you here, that kind of stuff. So what about like that part of the conversation, you know, about being like having to be the Hollywood package, about having Candace saying that part of her saying that Iris needs to die so that Candace can live. Like, what did you guys think of that part of the conversation?
I guess that was probably one of the more like surprising parts of the conversation. In that, like, obviously I think we've all noticed the change in Candace's attitude on social media, specifically on Instagram, because it's not, she goes on very much other social media. And how May was mentioning too, like what she posts about even. So I do think it's interesting that it has been a lot more of like defining herself as outside of Iris. And so hearing that she had felt kind of like submerged into that personality, if you will, was interesting, because I guess I wouldn't have expected it. I feel like obviously, yet at the same time, like her fans, like we have all been very, very pro Iris, and like everything is just like this and this and this for Iris. So I can see how that can be over.
I do feel like, and even in like the beginning, because I feel like we've talked about this before, that the way that they were writing Iris, Iris had to be so good. Like Iris could not be allowed to.
She wasn't allowed to make mistakes.
Even though they were writing her as someone that is too nice and too good, people were still finding stuff wrong for her, about her, like, and because they just wanted to find like faults with her. So I feel like that part, that's a lot of pressure to
for sure
that character,
for sure, especially if you're like like to think that you have to be like Iris. If people think that you are like Iris and Iris is already a too good to be true character, then that could definitely be exerting pressure or make you feel like you have to step outside of that, because you can't, like you said, you can't live up to that. And that wasn't something that I had ever really thought, like I hadn't thought about her thinking, but no, I hadn't thought that, you know, she might feel that way, that she herself as Candace is supposed to be living up to some expectation of Iris. So that was really interesting. And I do think that puts into perspective how she has kind of talked about the character and the show in recent years. And I do think, like, as she kind of mentioned too, like feeling sort of like this, like anxiety and depression building that certainly the pandemic, made worse,
exacerbated.
That's the word. Thank you. So, like, I think that that all coming together could make you feel a lot more just, like, basically exhausted from your job, right? It makes it feel like it's just, like, a mental drain on, like, what you're doing, that it has become your life, especially if you can't leave it. So since you could not physically leave it, then to also want to, like, mentally leave it and showcase that, feel the desire would become even stronger, I think. So hopefully in this final season, that will not be the case anymore. And she will be able to fly free very soon into a very different role.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a different, definitely an interesting part of the conversation. And I feel like as she's like, as we've also seen her personally, you know, grow more confident outside of the Flash in terms of like interviews, speaking up for herself, not being shy about talking about certain things or her experiences, we've seen more of that separation between Candace and Iris. And I feel like that is also really important to, like, it seems like it was really important to her, like Tati said, you know, wanting to have that separation, but also in terms of like how people have perceived her as fans, because I feel like everything was always like, she was so heavily associated with Iris for obvious reasons, but people, and I don't know if it was just like the misogynoir that got to her at some point, it's just like needing to point out to people that like, you have your complaints, you don't need to take them up with me, you should take them up with other people. And that like, she shouldn't be bothered about that stuff. And she's right, you know. So I feel like as time has gone on, she's discovered parts of herself that she, not that she didn't know existed maybe, but like that she's felt more comfortable showing or coming into her own in a lot of ways, especially as like a public figure. That separation has become more obvious over time, and she's like gone to great lengths to show that, especially on social media.
Yeah. And like you said, mate, like, and all of that comes from like the danger of like being first, because she did really break the mold in what companies were willing to look at and willing to cast for these types of roles. Like Iris West was the first one, and Candace Patton's like casting as Iris West was opened the floodgates for a lot of other Black women to step forward into more leading roles, more leading romantic roles in superhero genre. But because she was the first, and because, like, again, like we were mentioning, I think in the SDCC podcast about how companies want their diversity cookies. Look at us. We're so great. We have diversity, but they don't do the work. They just say, here it is. Here's your diverse cast. And then leave, you know, as Candace said, she is alone in the ocean and there are sharks in there. And they smell blood. They smell one lonely girl that doesn't have any support from her, you know, network behind her. And they just left her to fend for herself, really. And so there was a lot, of course, there's a lot of fandom pushback when you change things, and white people don't like that. So there's a lot of pushback from there. There wasn't any protections from the company, that it's not enough to check the box. And it's not just, on a social platform externally, external protections. There, she also talks about how there wasn't a lot of internal protections, and she and Elliot, both had experiences that they shared about the need for support behind the scenes for Black and minority actors. And even when it's not done with malice, there are, by people that, you know, have actual malice, there are people, well, and good intentioned people, but they have blind spots. And so what they don't recognize as a microaggression, we do as minorities. And when they happen, you know, over and over again, there's no one there just to look at it. And there's no one there for the actor to be like, you know, hey, like, are you seeing what I'm seeing, or to talk to about it? So some of the things that Candace mentioned was, you know, not being protected the same way that her white counterparts were, not being promoted in the same way. And at first when she said this, I thought, you know, like promotions, like salary, But I think she's like emotions like on social media.
Right.
And
right.
Of course, we can see that very clearly in the beginning, in the earlier seasons for sure, where, you know, every time there was anything to say about Candace, like Danielle always also had to be there. But Danielle could do stuff and Candace didn't have to be there. Or that the thing that pisses me off the most was when Keenan was cast as like Wally and Candace was the first person online to welcome him to the cast. And then Grant and Danielle said something and that was retweeted by the Flash Twitter, but not Candace, who is playing Wally's sister in the show.
Yeah.
And what was really surprising was when she did say that she had to ask her publicist or agent to ask the Flash to account to follow her back, which is wild because we all saw that, like, you know,
can see that as fans, like, for months, you know, just like seeing that the only two people or only two or three people that would be followed would be like Grant and Danielle or Grant, Danielle, and Tom. And it took forever for a show account to follow its lead actress. So what did you guys think about that, like, part of the podcast and the conversation about, you know, protections and are there any other things that you guys remember from, like, the earlier seasons where that just kind of helped you connect the dots listening to the podcast?
I mean, I just remember us, like, contacting Suzanne Gomez, I believe it was, who, like, the PR person for CW and constantly, like, asking about, like, why Candace wasn't in, like, a poster or, like, why they hadn't retweeted this or why even stuff, like, why she wasn't being followed. So, I mean, that very much, I can only imagine how it must have felt from her perspective. Like, this is, like, the biggest thing is just hearing how much it, or, like, you know, that it did affect her at first because at first she wanted to be included and then she had to choose to not care to be included, right?
Right.
It's, like, I feel like you even saw that progression. Of her just, like, being less invested in being, quote-unquote, part of the cast because she felt alienated from it in the first place thanks to the machinations of the network or even the, you know, incredible neglect. Because, like, whether it was intentional or not, like, it's just, like, an unbelievable amount of neglect that took place for her to then kind of, like, step away from it. So I guess that was what was most resonant to me, since I feel like there's always been, like, debate, like, oh, maybe she doesn't want to or whatever, you know, like, maybe that's what it is, maybe she's the one that doesn't care. But now it's like she's saying, like, I did care and now I don't because there was no other choice but to not care. So which I guess then also does feed into the I think it's the next point, like, you know, having to stand up for yourself and be quote-unquote difficult
whether to be liked or to get what you need.
Exactly. So, like, it sucks that you would even have to make that choice in the first place and that other people don't have to make that choice.
I think it's just really sad because, and we've known it's sad for a long time, but I guess to, like, hear it, you know, is also a little bit different because it makes it all the more real than it already was. And I think even, like, you know, acting is a job. You come into a show or a film, you expect certain things, just like the network will expect you to do interviews. You expect some type of respect back of how to be treated like your peers on the show. And so I feel like it just really sucks that she had to go through this experience and it made her, like, grow up faster in the industry. I mean, on one hand, it's, like, a good thing. Like, you know now, and then moving forward, like, you know not to take this bullshit. But it was just really, like, to come into the show that's so big and so popular, and there's a lot of talk about it, and, you know, to have that experience and to not have that support. And I think, like, seeing that she didn't have that support from the fan perspective, but from our perspectives, and then seeing how that's even changed nowadays with regards to, like, other actors of color coming onto shows and, like, Black women coming onto shows, and how, like, I guess the most recent example was
Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and him being like, you don't like her. Well, then you're not really a fan of Star Wars. Like, that's the kind of support we never really saw for Candace. And I think that it, like, personally, I'm sure it's like she said, you know,
and really Percy her. Jackson with the casting of Annabeth. Mm-hmm,
right.
Exactly. So things like that we don't see and still don't see, honestly, for her. And that's just really, that's like the most disappointing thing is like even so recent as a couple months ago for her birthday, the account would like tweeted about her birthday
and then deleted it.
Like, and it's like, and it was a cute tweet too. Yeah. So like there is intention behind having like a good happy birthday, but then what happened? And then for it to just like,
and
like,
never bring it back.
Never bring it back. Like what the fuck?
Yeah. So like to see that in 2022, after the show's been on for so long, it's coming up on its last season.
And they can
it's
still just, like, do and still for, like, the Carlos. Thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
So yeah, it's just really sad.
I mean, I just forgot what I was going to say about it. So never mind.
Well, I will elaborate more on our discussion. You can weave it in there for sure. I have confidence in you. But like, yeah, going like further into that, like the whole being let go of wanting to be liked versus getting what you need is like, you know, and they talked about how that's kind of like the Black female experience just in general. Like at a certain point, you know, you want to, you like saying, may I please, can I have, and all this kind of stuff, because that's just who you are as a person. But when that doesn't get you where you need to be, and you do have to be a little bit tougher and you do have to grow a thicker skin. And then that kind of leads to the stereotype of like the strong or quote unquote angry Black woman.
Right.
And then that, especially they talked about how in Hollywood being stereotyped as that when Hollywood is only casting you based on perceptions anyway, how that can even further limit Black women and how we're allowed to succeed within the entertainment industry. And I think this is part of the conversation where Candace revealed, which was shocking to me, that she wanted to leave with early season two.
Yeah.
Just because of like the toxicity on the set. And I mean, I remember season two, because that was like a dark time for us.
You were all going to leave.
Hey, we were all trying to leave, Candace.
Yeah.
Early in season two, because it just did not seem on screen, you know, with my eyeballs, I could see that this was not a very positive kind of experience. So, you know, and then they kind of talked, her and Elliot as well. Elliot also talked about his experience on set and recent experiences on being on set and having these microaggressions and things that were happening consistently to him that were not happening to any of his white counterparts, like being stopped by someone whose job isn't even to be, you know, set security. They're just being fucking nosy and like, what are you doing here? And not, you know, realizing that he's a part of the cast, different things like that. And then not only do you have to deal with those microaggressions from people that you work with on set, then the camera says, go. And you have to sell, you know, separate whatever you're feeling personally, frustration in the moment, and sell a reality or sell like a fiction that's completely separate from what your personal one is going through. So what did you think about kind of, you know, first Candace saying, you know, that she wanted to leave as early as season two, and then also about like the microaggressions and the experiences that Elliot talked about?
First, I remember what I was going to say, which was that it's like, it should be a learning experience. Like, her early experiences should have then led the CW to treat her in a different way now. Like Star Wars, in the previous trilogy, John Boyega got so much hate, and they did not do anything to protect him, and he felt like it was a toxic environment, and now they have learned from that, presumably, which is why they immediately protected Moses, or put out something for Moses, which is exactly what should have happened. And same thing with Kelly, that she was like bullied off of social media during the second Star Wars movie of this last trilogy. But they've, you know, presumably changed their ways to whatever degree after that. And yet with the CW, this keeps happening, even as things seem to have gotten better, like on set, in that like more conversations are being had, or she's finding more people to make connections with, whatever. And yet the behind the scenes stuff does not change. So for her to say it's better now than it was in season two when she was already wanting to leave, it must have been so much worse even than we thought that it was. Mm. Which is very terrible to imagine.
I also think it was like around this part in the conversation that then something that made me feel sad was that this was why she doesn't watch the show. She can't live tweet or watch the show because
like going through trauma. Yeah, PTSD. To get there.
Like, you know, yeah. What thinking about like she's and it was sad because she's saying, I just wonder how much more, because we always think that her performances are amazing. She's one of the best people, actors on the cast.
Right.
But for her to say
that she could have done better
this was my struggle. See, right. This is my struggle acting. Imagine how much better I could have been if I was in like a supportive environment, not having to be in a constant state of fight or flight
right
during my work day.
Yeah, and that's not even just like not even just with the performances, but like with the way that she talks with the show or the way that she engages fans with the show, where she used to be a lot more active in talking about it and about the character. Like now it's not so much because again, once you have like used up all your resources to get through it, because it's such a struggle, the job is such a struggle, then you're not wanting to think about it. You're not wanting to enjoy it in any particular way outside of it. And as Elliot was saying, that's so sad because you should be proud of and excited by what you just did, because you're going to show it to everyone and everyone is loving it, right? Like all your friends are loving it. And more, even more than that, like so many people who are not just like crazy psychos have recognized that Iris and Candace are one of the better parts of the show and that the show is better when Barry and Iris are a unit, etc. They want to see more Iris. They want more of her stories. But for her, it's like, it's not even a win to get more of those stories because the work is so difficult due to the environment and due to like the microaggressions that Elliot was talking about as well. And I think that is super sad too. Like that's probably one of the biggest reasons why she's always wanted to go back to LA and why it's so much harder for her when she can't. So, and like, I mean, like for anyone, it would be difficult, but especially when you have a, like, you're already like, maybe like a little like introverted, you know, like, and like you don't have easily, you can't easily find resources to, I guess, put your burden down or like give your burden to someone to help them so they can help you share it too. So all around, I just feel really bad for her.
Yeah. Same. And I was also surprised by the fact that she wanted to leave as early as season two, or even that she can't go back to like watch old episodes because of like how she was feeling at that time. It like recalls those memories. And I think that's just to want to have to leave your job, something that you worked for, that you got, that you are a bright spot on the show because things are so bad. Behind the scenes, and it just like makes me, it reminds me of that one story she told, and this was like several years ago, I think, at this point, where she was not satisfied with like her makeup at that point. She had to film like a really tough scene and she had to like ask to them to stall so that she can go adjust it so that she could like feel good about herself in front of the camera. And like,
who is this?
Like when she had to fix her makeup, and she had to like ask him to stall.
Oh, Candace?
Yeah. And thinking like that in that moment, like how she can't just go back and watch that stuff because it just reminds her of everything that she went through. And I think that that's just, it just makes me so sad that it's worse than we probably can imagine. You know, like we saw things on the, you know, the external side of things and not exactly what she was going through, even though you get a sense of something's like wrong, and you see that something's wrong, but to have to go through that like every day, especially in the early seasons where you're, you know, you start something new, you're really happy about it. And the fact that it took such a, like, the job was so hard in terms of like the way that she was treated on set or outside of set, and how that takes like a mental and emotional toll on you to the point where you're just not like, that doesn't spark joy for you anymore, you know? And I think that that's really, it's just always really sad to hear. And it's worse now. Like this was Candace's version of the tell all, even though she didn't drop names or anything like that. But, it's just really disheartening to learn of how bad it was, like worse than we thought, you know?
Yeah, And then they go into kind of like begin to the Black Lives Matter movement. And around that time, like everybody has like white guilt. And so all of your friends and your coworkers are calling you like, you know, didn't know that it was that bad, or I'm sorry I didn't speak up, and I'm sorry for what you went through. And, you know, while people are trying to, you know, assuage themselves of the guilt that they felt they didn't speak up enough. And, you know, you're obviously, you know, glad that it's starting like a conversation. It just, you know, as I said, it does show that there is some level of awareness that something was happening that was unfair. And they both mentioned that, you know, it's not like blame the person for not speaking up, because at that point, you know, Candace couldn't speak up for herself. And she also mentioned, she doesn't mention by name, but she just says that one person, there's one person that stood up for her, and Elliot knows who that person is. So, but only one person out of how many actors, guests have been on the show, have probably witnessed things. And I know, like, especially the biggest thing when we did our Ally podcast, that we griped about, especially on The Flash, is the fact that Grant Gustin was not the best lead on the show, especially when it came to support.
Right.
You know, in the beginning, in the early first season or whatever, obviously there was some excitement there for Barry and Iris and for Wes Allen. But as far as being able to protect Candace, which, you know, the network wasn't protecting Candace, so it's like, how do you expect Grant to protect Candace? But Grant, I don't think Grant even tried a lot. Like, I remember, like, there's a lot of kerfuffles between Grant and the IWDS about, you know, the whole, there's a whole theater community kerfuffle where he would keep,
yes,
the theater community, of course he wouldn't isolate Candace like that. But, you know, just like instances like that where, again, it was stuff that we were saying, like, Grant, why don't you say something? Why don't you support Candace? Like when season two rolled around and he had that mid relationship with Patty Civet, and then he's all over Instagram posting about his ship there. But when it's time for Barry and Iris to kick off and get together, it's like radio silence or stuff like that. Or like when we, you know, kind of get the idea of maybe he was doing things behind the scenes with like the We Are the Flash hats, but it doesn't really translate to the fandom. And so I personally, I feel like one of those phone calls came from Grant. I think probably that was, they had like a huge, and he even said that he had a conversation with Candace. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was like another one of his,
I'll do better.
Because China yeah, posted, like, commented on, like, yes, Grant, ally. And we were like, no, girl. Like, we right, don't love Grant. You can love Grant, but we've seen some stuff. And then he had to hop on and, you know, apologize again for not being the lead of the show that he could have been, which, you know, the lead of the show really does set the tone for not only the cast, but for what, for fandom as well, because it's like what you allow fandom to be able to do. People, they won't talk about Candace on Grant's Instagram if he puts his foot down and says, I will not tolerate this.
Right.
But that isn't something that he did. And so, you know, they had that whole spiel of, you know, born again, born again ally.
Yeah. But those meltdowns that you were referencing also speak to like just how ill accustomed a white man is to being confronted with anything, so that he had to act out so much more than Candace has ever acted out, that we have seen, yeah, over the course of 9 years with everything that she has faced, and she has had to keep it in order to like get the job done and in order to get what she needs. And meanwhile, Grant can even handle someone suggesting that this is happening to Candace. And that he has done nothing about it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, what was that one podcast he did? Was it last year? Where he basically said that
He grew up with a variety of friends.
Yeah, but he didn't know it was that bad or whatever. And I'm just like, I guess there's our answer as to why he didn't defend Candace all these years. And I feel like
I have to call bullshit on that because I just, you know, I feel like she would have at least tried to have like a conversation of, especially like if she's having like hard days on set. I know that, you know, they have to talk on set between the cast members. So I, you know, yeah.
Yeah. I think when it came to all that, like he really just, he didn't have a backbone whatsoever. But
it was so funny. Unfortunate. During the Black Lives Matter, you know, protests of that summer, he was just like, you know, completely a new born again crusader for justice. And we're like, yeah, you know what? You know, you're not God tier, but you are trying to make your way up. We see you trying to be reformed or whatever. And then it's just like, nope.
yeah. But, you know, thinking back on that, there's like a pattern because every time he says he's going to try something.
It's a wave.
Like,
yes.
Yeah. He's going to do like something really different. Into, or really gonna, intense. Yeah, and then he just leaves social media for a long time and you don't hear back from him. And it's just frustrating because I feel like supporting your co-star could have been such an easy task, like post about her every once in a while, even in like, I don't know, a group shot if you don't want
to be. It's not even asking you to police the fandom. Like, we're not asking you to go against, you know, just like have like a boundary, set boundaries for the fandom of what you will and will not allow with your cast. And as much as we hate on ML and all
he
of his
lore during his little crossover,
he controlled like his set, and whether he liked you or like Emily Bette Regards, or whether he didn't like you at one point, Katie Cassidy, like he set the tone for, you know, Phantom and what they thought that they could get away with and not get away with. And Grant, just like you said, he didn't really have a backbone there, or he wasn't really prepared for what it means to be the lead.
I feel like there's a lot of self-involvement there too, in the sense that, like, you know, when I think it was whatever season he got his new suit and he didn't have little chin straps.
Oh, and he threw a fit and then all of them
down about body shaming or whatever. And I'm like, if somebody who can't even like get on the internet and see like a comment, he just goes off. Like, but it's always about him. He doesn't see anybody past himself, from what I've seen on social media. And I feel like that's also an issue. So I just feel like he can't take it, and which is really frustrating because he has a lot of power, and still does, and yet he doesn't really do
much. I think he likes to be liked, you know, and that's like, when you like to be liked, you like to be liked by everybody, and so in order to be liked by everybody, you must do absolutely nothing, because if you take like a stand, especially, you know, against like the Phantom to protect Candace and say that, you know, she is our lead, she's our leading lady, then you risk that pissing off racist people. Yeah. And why would you want to be liked by racist people? I don't know. But the need to be liked, I think, is a factor as well. And even in his support of Candace, is because he needed to be liked
by us.
Stalin people that were why aren't you doing things? And that's why you don't really see a lot of like longevity in that, because it's like, I need for them to like me now. I've done this thing. Now they're satisfied. And then you dip off.
Yeah, it was just a whirlwind to just watch all that stuff go down, and I feel like I'm sure that Grant likes Candace as a person, but I feel like he can't and doesn't want to really, at the end of the day, distinguish with like how her hatred feeds into racism and sexism and things like that, because he just doesn't want to look past that. He doesn't want to, you know, get rid of this idea of like the America that he knows is a white man.
Well, it's because it's difficult. That's the difficult thing to do, to look at something and be like, this is not what it should be. You know, so, and then he has the privilege of just not dealing with it. So. There we go. But back to the kind of the podcast, we kind of went around about that. But yeah, like, you know, they talked about that kind of situation and how it feels to, you know, people kind of knew what was going on, but didn't really have the courage to stand up and say anything about it. And, you know, she didn't really have the courage to stand up and say anything about it herself at that time, because what kind of power do you have as one, you know, relatively newcomer into a studio to say, hey, this is not right. And having to grow into being okay with demanding things that you need, for example, like hair and makeup. Because that, I think this was another part of the podcast. Elliot also shared his experience. And one of the things that really kind of shook me, and because we've heard, you know, a lot of especially Black actresses talking about having horrible hair experiences. Is it Tatiana from the Sabrina show?
Yeah.
She has to, like, go, yes, do her own hair, her own finger waves, and go to set hours ahead of time to be able to do her own hair because there's not someone on set that can do her hair. Whereas her white counterparts can just, like, roll out of bed and be like, hi, and get, like, their hair done and be, like, on their way. And what Elliot was saying was that, like, he had this one really bad experience, like, this lady that she did Snoop Dogg's hair, like, once, and that, like, qualified her to do all Black hair. And so he was trying to tell her, this is what I need. And she was very arrogant and assuming that she knew everything and basically fucked up his head. And then he still had to do, like, yes, he had a job to do. And so I'm thinking, like, I'm just thinking about all of the horrible haircuts and wig choices that we've seen, not just because the CW is crap at buying wigs, but, like, just with Black actresses and actors in general. I remember, like, on Walking Dead, I don't remember the character's name. I just remember this Black guy. He had, like, this horrible cornrow wig thing that just looked awful. And thinking now, like, somebody on that hair set probably thought that that was good. And then you have this actor being like, my hair looks fucked up, and now it's going to look fucked up forever in memoriam because it is immortalized on film that people are going to be watching for 20 years, and how, like, demoralizing that is to have someone just, like, completely mess up, especially, like, hair is something that's important for a lot of people and a lot of women in general. And thinking about, like, a lot of, like, Black actresses now that they wear wigs or they wear, like, lace fronts and weave all the time because they don't want people messing up their actual hair. And I feel like that made a lot more sense to me. But I also feel like, again, like, it's super sad that you look a mess and now you're going to look a mess on something that has been immortalized and people are going to see forever. It's really sad and kind of depressing.
And I think, like, the she mentioned another guy in, I was going to say Toronto, Vancouver, who was doing,
came
in as a Black man who was doing Black hair because,
right,
they finally, no, like, brought some, right, no one else could, and they're like, oh, they're complaining about, like,
so
expensive, and it's like, see, you could have avoided all of this if you had actually hired people to begin with, but here you are, like, now complaining.
I mean, there's, like, a lot of, like, gatekeeping in the hair and makeup industry, because you have to have, like, certain number of, like, license or, like, credit hours or whatever, and Black hairdressers and makeup artists can't really get in, and it's all being, like, gatekeeped by the white people in the industry, but they don't know how to do all types of hair or all types of skin tones and makeup.
Exactly. And I feel like there's so much, like, ego and pride when it comes to this too. It's not even like we can say that we were wrong and now we'll hire somebody for you versus, like, no, it's fine. You'll just have to deal with it and then just, like, feel shitty about yourself.
Somebody's, like, self-esteem and confidence and just being like,
it is so crucial. I mean, like, I remember, like, this wasn't even, like, a haircut. Somebody just messing up a hairdo I wanted. And, like, I'm 17, very emotional. Crying about it. So I can't imagine like somebody like fucking up your hair so badly and you have to be on camera.
Yes.
You know, in front of people trying to act. And it's just,
it's like, not even that you don't know how to do it. You don't want to learn.
Exactly. Either.
Right. So. Right. They were talking about like having this, like, you know, having the audacity, first of all, and to say like, oh, I know how to do this. I can do this. You can't stop me from doing this. It's offensive for you to suggest that I don't know how to do it. And then to just like go fuck it up like it's on purpose. When you could have just been like, well, I guess I'll take a class and then come back.
Yeah, and then next time. Act like the actresses were like the ones being bitchy about it. Like, no, you fucked up. But yeah, all of that
like stuff. Another kind of like trauma response from that a lot of them, like Candace said, that she has an emergency makeup kit with her at all times, just in case someone doesn't know how to do her makeup and she has to like redo the whole thing.
Which so it's just like, extra work she's not being paid
extra
for, right?
Extra work, extra stress.
Yeah. And wasn't there like a time she flew to LA to do her hair?
In yes. Advance? Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Just when you're on a set and you think that all of these things are supposed to be provided for you, and they should be, and they are for, you know, white actors, then it should be a thing to have it for everybody else too. Like, I think that's just like, it should be industry standard. Otherwise, what are you doing?
I feel like I don't remember if it was like Gabrielle Union or it was some other like Gabrielle Union or Regina Hall or somebody. They're talking about like experience with people that don't know how to do black hair and like the reasons why that they, you know, come with like weave or they have their natural hair protected, and like you could have like really nice, really healthy hair, but one experience with this one person that doesn't know how to do your hair, and now you've got like damaged completely, like all of your ends, you just like messed up your hair is like something, it's separate from work, like you, it's still part of you, so to have that messed up for this one job, something that you've been like nurturing for your life, is just like really feel for black women in the industry, and it makes a lot of sense, like in when you think about it, especially the fact that Elliot brought up, you know, not only did they do this to you, this is like an assault on your person, now you have to perform for them. And that just kind of like makes it even more like insulting having to perform, knowing that in your head, and you know, you're all of your friends are gonna be like looking at you like, you know, you looked a mess on there, right? And you're like, I know.
Yeah, exactly. And even like, it won't just be your friends too, you know, like people who are watching are gonna be like, what is wrong with that? And then they're gonna like talk about the actor as if the actor made that choice.
Right.
So, and you know, distracting from the work that you're having to overcome your trauma to do in the first place.
Those were like the biggest highlights, I feel like, for me, from the podcast. Was there anything else that stuck out to you guys that you want to kind of discuss about the episode?
Not off the top of my head. I think you hit all the really major points that I remember from the podcast.
I think it was all like a really good, like it was really good to listen to all of it. Like it was all incredibly interesting. And I think that it's going to really open up a lot of people's like perspectives, I guess, you know, like I feel like anyone who watches the show should listen to it just to understand, get a better understanding of what has been going on and why they might be confused by certain things that Candace does. But overall, like, I think that, like, based on everything that she said, that she has behaved very, very well. So.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Because I feel like if she hadn't, quote unquote, behaved well, there's always, like, the fear of retaliation, which is why, like, especially in the earlier seasons, you didn't really hear anything from her because you're not, like, established. You never know like what's gonna happen. Are they gonna write you out? Are they gonna kill you off? Are they gonna do this or that to basically like make you lose your job because you might have said something that they didn't like? And we've seen that play out with several actors with different studios, most recently Ray Fisher and WB. So Yeah, there's always like that fear. And I totally understand like why someone would not be comfortable saying certain things, because there's right. still that issue in Hollywood in general in the industry about like, say something, if you don't have those connections and you don't know people, you're just going to be screwed.
Yeah, but I guess that is... Oh, sorry?
Go ahead, Tessie.
I was going to say, I guess that is one of the big takeaways for me from that, was she was saying, like, don't be afraid to speak up and stand up for yourself, because you are more valuable than you think you are, right? They do need you. That's why you are here.
that's what we... and, of course, I'm turning it around to center us in this conversation. But I do feel like... with the Iris Bliss Defense Squad, we were able to give Candace the statistics that she needed to right, help to prove. Her wait around to prove exactly. that, you know, yes, you do need me. You need my fan base. So that has kind of helped her in any way. Then I definitely
agree. I guess it's true, like, not everyone has that benefit, but right. you should act like you do.
Yes, for sure.
So I definitely think this has been like a good conversation. It was a good opening for Elliot's podcast series. I thought it brought like a lot of attention. It got a lot of media attention as well, especially, you know, the two hot lines about how she wanted to leave in season two and how the network didn't protect her. It got a lot of media traffic and started, I think, a lot of good conversations. And of course, you know, the CW has nothing to say, because what are they going to say? Like, we did it. So,
and if they did say something, people have receipts, so it's not like they can actually defend it. Exactly.
So anyways, if you guys had any thoughts or, you know, feelings about, revelations from the podcast that you, want to share, then you can always send us an email at ladiesofthegumption@gmail.com. And we will post it to Tumblr, and we'll talk about it in the news for the next podcast. So, yeah. Come back. I think we should probably schedule Love Boat soon. Mm-hmm. That should be the next one that we do. So, and also, if you have Love Boat feedback, then let us know what that is.
Bad trombone.
And that's it for tonight. So... thanks for joining us. See you guys next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.